Okay, and close the door when whoever walks in, let them, okay, it's working. Thanks, Moshe. Today is Sunday, November 22nd, 2011. I want to say hello to the students here, those who will walk in, but above all to the many who are listening across the great universe. I also want to say a few words. If you're familiar with news in Israel, a very prominent person died last week, Eli Horowitz, the founder of Teva, the builder of Teva, the man brought the billions of dollars into Israel. And at his funeral, which unfortunately shows you our problems here, a Chiloni funeral in a kibbutz, his daughter spoke very harshly against the hospital, and it made the headlines in all the newspapers. Some of you know I've spent the last week more in the hospital than anywhere else. My mother is quite ill. And I didn't want to say anything last night. And I have to tell you, I am overwhelmingly impressed with the dedication of Shaarei Tzedek. You should know that. And I came into it. Yeah, no one knows me. He's not that harassed. Kefet Mokin, people know him. Now a few doctors know me, and I met a doctor that I know from the Shtidlach. But the dedication is beyond words. And I can tell you this morning, my brother and my daughters all decided, you know, not to do anything heroic. And I walked in this morning. I was here by 6:30. It's Rosh Chodesh. I left here at about 8:25. No, it's at Shaarei Tzedek. I would say by 7:50. I was ready upstairs, and I couldn't believe my mother's coloring was a million times better. And the doctors pleaded with me to do something that my brother said not to do. And my daughters agreed with him. I was silent, because I don't, if I don't understand it thoroughly, I don't want to have an opinion. So I want you to know, I called my brother. He was teaching in medical school. He evidently understood I'm calling from the hospital. And he told me, if the doctors insist, go ahead. And I just spoke with my daughter now, and I give, and everything, you know, stabilized. My brother was blown away, bringing a woman 98 years old. Well, my brother's been in Tel Shomer, he's been in Laniado. He's here since we brought him in 73, we got here 69. So my brother told me, in America, bringing a 98-year-old woman, they wouldn't do anything. And I was talking at the cult health. I went from the hospital to the cult health. My grandson drove me Friday night. So a surgeon who had worked at Shaarei Tzedek told me that that's Shaarei Tzedek. He's retired. He's a classmate of my brother. And he told me stories about other hospitals. That was a kol hakavod to Shaarei Tzedek. Would be b'leva nefesh, I have to say it. Okay, anyway, b'mit palel, yehudit bas peset sipa. And I always felt my mother would hit 100, so I'm slightly more optimistic at this moment. Okay, now, if you recall, a few weeks ago we spoke about Kabbalah influencing the halakha. So a Talmud of mine, Steve Gross, whom I don't think many of you know, but he plays a very big role in my life. He's in America right now. He showed me, he said, exactly what you said, Reb Moshe said. And I want to give you a source, because if Aaron Akefet says it, it's certainly unimportant. But if Reb Moshe says it, we all have to listen with two ears. So I'm quoting from the Yigrat Moshe Orech Chaim, the fourth chelik of Orech Chaim, Siman Gimel. And I don't want to go into great detail, because it's not a topic we're dealing with in class, but it's a topic that all of you have come across. You're up all night, Shavuos night learning. So what do you do for Birchat HaShachar? You'll have to say Birchat HaShachar if you're up all night. So, what does it depend upon? Is Birchat HaShachar depend upon you, what your situation is, and if you were up all night, you said it the day before? Or no, it depends upon the reality that it's a new day. Once it's a new day, you have to say the bracha that thank God you're alive and you're commanded. All right? So, this is a machlekes ha-paiskim, and we paskim the halacha. If you're up all night, it's the Mishnah Brewery, you may be familiar with it. If we're up all night, Daniel, you see that young man at the end? I taught his half-sister, I think, before he was born. I had such nachat when I heard his last name. Oh, it's a family you should know, Lowenstein. They're from, that's Daniel Lowenstein. That young lady is from the greater Lawrence area. So, anyway, Daniel, if you see the Mishnah, he says, you don't say the bracha if you're up all night. You know, they always try to find someone to be motzimi with the bracha, right? You've experienced that. I don't have to tell you. So Rav Moshe was asked by someone corresponded with him that al pi Kabbalah, you do have to say the bracha. So Rav Moshe tells him, halach is halacha, Kabbalah is Kabbalah. And he says, if it would be in the Sefer HaZohar, there's no question that some of the concepts of the Sefer HaZohar go back to Chazal, go back to a very early period. But he says, when you quote the Mekubalim, who are deriving halacha from the Kabbalah, they're achronim. And Rav Moshe, you know, only Rav Moshe can talk like this. And Rav Moshe says, if they're achronim, we have a right to argue, and we also have an opinion. And who can tell us? Rav Moshe says, the lo lono yatmei diyatmei lo mambiga domi mi. And he says, we in our generation, who are we? We're nobodies. We don't have a right to decide who's bigger than the other, and we have a right to our opinion. And if the Mishnah Brura paskin that you don't say the bracha, and you have to have someone else lahotzi otcha, I follow the Mishnah Brura. So anyway, I just wanted to add to what we said in class, and Eihachinami, and I stand on everything I said, and anyone who thinks that the Rav was a Mekubal because he quoted Kabbalah, you quote Kabbalah, it's an akron, it's a thought, it's a concept. Judashin, I just prepared a drasha, so in the drasha, I quoted Kabbalah. It doesn't make me Mekubal, but I took an idea. The truth is, you want to give a drasha, I hate to say it. A drasha, I went searching the Mashkich of the Yeshiva. A drasha is very different than Musa. Musa, you look at the text and you say to yourself, what is the text teaching me? And you have to derive from the text. It's not your mind that counts, it's the text. A drasha, you want to, I mean, I heard this from Mashkich, but I saw the Rav in action. You want to give a drasha. I have an idea I want to express. But I don't want to walk in and give a drasha without quoting sources. So I will find sources and fit them into my idea. I will use them as pegs on which to hang my hat. You follow? So if I found something in the Zohar that I can play with and it fits into what I want to say, I'll quote it. But it doesn't make me a Mekubal. And I stand on what I said, but this thought from Rav Moshe is very powerful. Now, last week, and what we're dealing with in class, last year in the Kolo, we had 5 inter-ethnic married couples. And it's a topic that has long interested me when an Ashkenazi marries a Sephardi. We have one couple this year, Kastrola, right? Anyone else that we have inter-ethnic couples, or there's only one this year? What's his last name? I don't know. Okay. So this year we have 2. Okay. So the question is very simple. You run the Tomchei Shabbos in Baltimore. Comes Pesach, can you give cans of baked beans with a heksha from the rabbinate in Israel? You have to. So Ashkenazim, you can't give it to. Sfatim, you can give it to. What if a Sfardiya marries? What if an Ashkenaziya marries a Sfardi? And can she eat the baked beans? Can she eat the baked beans? And this is the question. Now, we dealt last week with the whole problem of Sfira, which is a fascinating problem. And again, we're so divided in Minhagim. It's like you said about your father last night, that your father couldn't care less whether it's the first 33 or the last 33. Sfira, Sfira. He's talking about his father. That to him it was all Sfira. You had to observe all 49 days. So we all know that some Achleikis, we can get married Lag Ba'Omer, they have to get married Lag Ba'Omer, the 34th. And we dealt with the whole problem of the wedding in Argentina, and it's an Ashkenaziya marrying a Sfardi, and the wedding is set for Lag Ba'Om in the late afternoon. The Sfardim are going crazy. How can we come to the wedding? How can we participate if it's not Lag Ba'Om? It's not the 34th yet, and the Ashkenazim are going crazy. How can we eat in the food the Lag Ba'Om at night? If Lag Ba'Omer is over and we hold 33 days from Rosh Chodesh Iyah. Okay, so we showed you the Minchat Yitzchak, we showed you Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, and they paskened la halacha that you start the wedding before nightfall, don't have too much music, the Eidat HaMizrach, the Sfatim can participate, the meal begins towards the evening, and the Ashkenazim can remain and be part of the Suda. Matan, even by Ashkenazim, I showed you the Shonim Mitzvim B'Halacha, that's the way we ended off the last year, and even by Ashkenazim, the truth of the matter is that we can always find the Chetter to get married during Svira. If Matan finds a girl and he has to rush back to Los Angeles and time is pressing and the Israeli army is calling you up for Miluim, let's put all the factors into it. And you say, Rebbe, I can only get married, it's the 30th day, I can't work till Lag BaOmer or whatever. And so if it's your first marriage, which is pre-Rivia, it's a mitzvah to get married, to have children. So I showed you, even the Shonim Mitzvim B'Halacha, who was Ungarish Posek, he was a great Posek. I know the family. I feel as if, I never met him, but I feel as if I know him. I know the family. When I spend the 5 weeks a year in Borough Park, I daven next to his great nephew, Mamish. We sit next to each other. His great nephew I'm now related to, because one of my granddaughters married an elephant. One of my grandsons married into the elephant family. And he's a brawn and an elephant. He has both yichus on both sides. So we're now related. Not that it helps much, but we're related. Baruch Hashem. You know why I'm saying that, because I had a Talmud elephant who last Erev Purim honored me by, let's not even say it, but in my book, you know that all the dedications are alive except one. It says Olav HaShalom, and it still hurts me something terrible. But anyway, he didn't let pressure influence him. He was a posek, and I have to tell you, when you finish smicha and you have time to start learning, because Kol Zman, your relative was a guest of my children last night for Shabbos, Friday night. Your relative, be aware. She was a guest, so you are, say them, I have good children, thank God. Credit my wife, the Shia credit me. It's Lag BaOmer, we can find a way around. He paskins that way, and the sefer that he wrote, the Shonim Mitzvim B'Halacha, I once had a student, the Kola, I don't want to mention his name, he was going into the Rabbinate. He came over to me after he got smicha, he said, Rebbe, I feel so inadequate, how much do I know? So I told him, you have to make two siddurim. One, go through Mishnayot. That way you do Shisha Sidrei Mishnah with Kahati. It's all intelligible today, including Zrayim, which was so difficult to understand. Even Taharat is a little bit easy to understand. It's difficult. Oh, have you ever learned Ohalot, Kalim? You understand what I'm saying? This is heavyweight material, because we don't know exactly. It talks about a kaveret, what's a kaveret, what's the shape, etc. But Gahati has made it a lot easier. And I said, in addition, go through the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, which are an imbitzim b'halacha, will give you a feeling of psak. The third thing you must do when you go into the Rabbinate is keep on learning Gemara. Because once you stop learning Gemara, Yazveni Yom Yomayim Yazvecha, once you lose the ability to handle a daf, it's very hard to get it back. And that's important. And the Rabbinate, you'll always have pressure on you. The time pressure, everyone is bothering you. And I say again and again and again, I learned something. I mean, I know what I did in my own life, but I'm not an example because I ran away from the world. I'm a poor example. I didn't accomplish anything in my life. I ran away and just indulged myself in Torah Hashem Tamima. But in the army, I can tell you, Eidut Nemanah, that when I did Miluim like every 10 days, it was called Miluim Mefutzalim. I used to sign a form. So in the army, I always would arrive early where I had to give a lecture, and it was always in the Matek Kvali in Tel Aviv, in the Central Army Post. And many times the chief rabbi wanted to see me. So I would get there, let's say, 20 to 9. His office, his aide-de-camp would bring me cake and coffee. They could not knock on his door till 9 o'clock. 7:30 to 9 o'clock every morning, only if the Prime Minister or the Shah HaBitachon wanted to speak to him. Otherwise, no one could interrupt him. And he was sitting and learning, and that's what you have to do. You have to block out time. Now, we have arrived. Rabbi Ovadia Yosef. Let me say by way of general introduction, in 100 years from now, it's going to be so hard to find what Rabbi... When I'm going to give a source now in a minute, the problem is that Rabbi Ovadia so succeeded with his children that he has svarim that were written and rewritten and restyled and re-edited and new editions. And I can tell you it is very difficult to find what you are looking for from the, because if you're looking in an earlier Sefer, and I'll come to it much later this year or next year, I'll give you a classic example where they totally reprinted and gave it new names. And you have to, the only way I got to what I was looking for was by going to an Eidat HaMizrach Talmud Chacham who was bucking Rabbi Ovadia's writings, and he could tell me what happened to the Sefer that Rabbi Ovadia issued 40 years ago, and now it's with an entirely different name. Now, I want to quote something that was issued a long time ago. It's called Chazon Ovadia, Chelik Bet on Hilchat Pesach. In other words, Chazon Ovadia, I don't know today how you'll be able to locate it. You can check in the private library down the hall, which the boys put in, the Eidat HaMizrach, they built their own shul here, and they put in all of the svarim. And it's Chazon Ovadia, I quote it again, Chelik Bet, was published in 1967 originally. He's dealing with Hilchot Pesach. And on page... Let me get the right page here because I see the Xerox already did not come out well. On page Nunvav 56, here Rav Avadia Pashtins La'alocha, Eshet Ashkenaziyah, an Ashkenazic woman who married a Sephardic man. Notice that most of the interethnic marriages are the Ashkenaziyah marrying a Sephardic man. That itself has to be a social study, how that happens. In Israel, of course, where we have an ingathering of the exiles, and certainly in the Tzioni Dati world, a lot of these barriers have fallen. In other words, nowadays there's very little difference between the Ashkenazi kid and the Sephardi kid learning in Yeshivat Hezda, or doing Hezda in the army, or serving the Nachal Haredi, and all the barriers fall. But notice, Isha Ashkenazian is all the Baal Sfadi, and she all her life never ate rice and legumes on Pesach. But by the way, I just want to say in parentheses that I mentioned weeks ago that when I was a kid growing up, it was rumored that there were poskim who permitted peanuts on Pesach. It's not a legume, and I mentioned Lubavitch, they put out peanut oil with Beryl Levy's Heksha. So a student just emailed me, I have to check it out, that Reb Moshe also paskin that the peanuts are not legumes. So it's fascinating. But she didn't, she grew up in an Ashkenazic home.
Why is this for a rabbi to decide? This is for a biologist to tell us.
No, there's only one problem with this. There is no biological, there's no botanot, I think botanomy is the word, botanology, I don't know, find the word. Anyway. There is no halachic definition of what a legume is. This is our problem. What is a legume? You know that the Jews who don't eat garlic on Pesach. The Eidah Haredit will not give a hechsher garlic. So I asked people in the Eidah Haredit, why don't you eat garlic? They said, because it's covered up, you don't know what's inside. It's like, so I said, why don't you eat onions? You eat onions? They said, yes, onions we do. So I said, what's between an onion and a garlic? So they told me, this is the Masorah. But if you could give me a halachic definition of what a legume is, then we can ask about a botanist, if I'm pronouncing it right. But if you don't give me a halachic definition, which we don't have, the same thing with chametz. Chametz and fermentation are two different things. The Gemara says it openly about rice. If you boil rice in water, don't you see it fermenting, overflowing, and you can boil rice for 18 hours, and it's not chametz. You take wheat, the five species, and you don't take it out of the oven until 18 minutes are over. It's chametz gamur. So that's the problem with what you're saying. But it depends upon minhag. Fine. And here she gets married, and she wants to take on her husband's minhagim, he says absolutely. And all the other minhagim that the Ashkenazim have, and certainly in relation to Pesach, she is allowed to change. And here, take a look what he requires. Hatarat nedarim. In other words, what does hatarat nedarim mean? I'll give you a simple example of hatarat nedarim, something that comes up very often. Generally you find it with a Baal Tshuva, with that type of mentality, but today you find it already in the yeshiva world. Everything needs right wing. You only use Chalav Yisrael. Okay, you only use Chalav Yisrael. Someone already is only using Chalav Yisrael for many years, and he misses M&Ms. He misses Hershey's. Okay? He misses M&Ms, he misses Hershey's. So he happens to hear a shiur from a Talmud Chacham, and the Talmud Chacham, you know, to shock the class at something shocking, he says, gentlemen, you're worried about Chalav Akum? There is no Chalav Akum today. In all these products that you can purchase, OUD, it's not Chalav Akum. Luke, can anyone tell me why? 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 What am I saying? Ah. What does Chalav Akum mean? Milk. Tell me, what did they use in manufacture? They use fresh milk? What are you out of your minds? Would you have any idea what's involved in storing and buying and keeping fresh? They milk avkat chalav, milk powder. Tell me, did milk powder exist at the time that the gezeira of chalav akum is made? Absolutely not. Milk powder didn't exist. Masha gazru gazrinin. Masha lo gazru lo gazrinin. You follow me, Moshe? Danny? I'll go. I keep on touching this. I hope I'm not knocking it out. But you know, I'm talking about the little gizmo. But I gotta learn not to put my hand there. But there's no way in the world that avkat chalav can be asa. We'll talk about this when we deal with Gezerah. I have big shurim that I'm preparing on Gezerah, the very fascinating topic. No way that it can be asa. So the kid finds out now, and Achalish, he's passing out M&Ms. She says, Rebbe, I want to be Mataneda. What do you mean you want to be Mataneda? I've come in Aliyah, I miss M&Ms. And you know, chocolate is a function of the way you grew up. If you grew up in Israel, the cow chocolate, that's elite chocolate, is sold here by millions and millions and millions of chafisot a year. But in America, you grew up in M&Ms, that's what you love. And then, you know, it's like ketchup. So when you grew up in America, you see how much Heinz ketchup they import to Israel. You got to be crazy to pay twice the price for Heinz that you pay for Osim. But my wife likes Heinz ketchup, so I splurge. I splurge. For her, I get Heinz ketchup. For myself, I get Osim. I can't bring myself to spend twice the price. To me, I've learned already to get along with Osims. Nishta Zegefelech. And I think it's healthier than the Heinz ketchup. But anyway, so the kid says, if I would have known that there's that Avkat Chalav didn't exist at the time they made a Gezerah on Chalav Akum, I would have never been careful, I would have eaten M&M's. So you say, and now that you know, you want, Amat Mutalacha, 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 you say the whole Lashon, Hakol Yematarmikol. Okay, so Rebbe Avadya here says, I want you to know, he changes his mind on this topic, but he says here, the woman has to say, Calls, man, I was in my father's house. My father would have beaten the hell out of me had I eaten rice and legumes on Pesach. Now that I'm in my husband's house, he'll be angry at me if I don't cook rice and legumes. So, and this is, of course, a big petach for Hatarat Nedarim. Okay, that's what Rabbi Avadya says. Yitzchak,
yeah. He's very liberal when it comes to the woman having to do it. Let's work it the other way.
Right.
Would he be so nice and kind and gentle if the Ashkenaz, the Sephardic wife, husband, yeah, wants to follow the minhag of his wife?
You know something, there's no problem whatsoever. He wants to be machmir. What's the big deal? You can be machmir on yourself. But we'll come to that.
We'll
do. So let me read the footnote to you and let me show you what you may be alluding to. Okay, so in the footnote underneath, Rav Ovadia goes into the reasons, and he says, as we've said, as we've seen from the Rishonim, as we saw from the Rivash, that a woman, when she marries, has to follow her husband's minhagim. The woman is nigredet acharei habal. You can't have two customs under one roof. And therefore, the woman has to follow the husband. And the key word here is shalom bayit. And it's a fascinating topic today with feminism. You're going to have this topic all the time. Who's what, when, where, whose domain, who follows whom. I just got a thank you note for a wedding where it's Masada Kedushin a few weeks ago. So she is maintaining her married name. So you get a note, both names are there, his name, her name. To me, this is a problem because the Torah says, Al mishpach totam levet avotam. What does the name mean? The name means identity. You have to identify families. There has to be a name on a bank account, a name on a house, a name who on the car. So yeah, when you start having two names, where does it end? Then you want to, you know, your mother's name, her maiden name. What are we, accounts out of the Middle Ages that had six, seven different last names? It becomes a problem. I feel very strongly we have to keep to our husband's name. When it comes to religion, the man has nothing to do with it. It's an amazing thing that if the mother is Jewish, the kid is Jewish. And we've had unbelievable stories today with all the assimilation and intermarriage. You suddenly find kids who were raised as Goyim, and they discover their grandmother was Jewish, their mother's mother, the kids are Jewish. If the grandfather was Jewish, they're not Jewish. They do have a din of Zera Beit Yisrael, which may affect the concept of the Geirut, that it could very well be, the Achronim already say this, that if someone has Jewish blood in them, it could be we're allowed to cajole them, influence them to convert. I have a case like that right now. I've dealt with this for years, and I don't even talk with the kid. And then you should understand, this kid is serving the Israeli army. He's in a very elite unit. The kid still believes in Jesus. To me, it's amazing. He was raised that way, and his parents, and they're the best and greatest people you will ever know. They brought, when they bombed out one of the buses at the end, Lower Lane, right under my window, I knew 2-3 people on that bus that were killed. 3 people who were killed. One of them was a YU Mismach, I believe. But anyway, they brought that bus to Holland, and then they paid to send it on to America. If you recall, a burnt-out bus was put in front of the Congress building in Washington, D.C. And these are the people. And the kid came in Aliyah. He has Jewish blood in him. So he was eligible to become an Olel, though he's a fourth generation. They had him, he had to get a special permission. And he went into the army. And the kid, the Sholeit B'Ivrit, his Hebrew is perfect. And he's in the army. And I met him at the Kotel 2 weeks ago. His parents were there. The whole unit was there from Golani. And that kid, if I would hear one word, you know, he would say to me, you know, that belief in Jesus is foolish. The minute I would hear that, I would try to convince him to convert. But if Kozman, I don't hear that, I can't do anything. So you see, there's a division here. But when it comes to the minhag and the bayit, we're going to have two minhagim. Well, by the way, we'll come back to this. It's, you'll see with the David Halevi, and you'll see the influence of the modern world. And in Chaval, we don't have too many rabbanim like Rab David Halevi, Zeichel Tzadik Levracha, who was the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. But I'll tell you what's fascinating here. In the footnote, here's Rav Ovadia, strong and sharp. And here he says, and he doesn't say it as clearly today. Recently, like before Rav Pesach last year, I expected him to open up his mouth loud and clear. There was a little diffidence there. Here he says very clearly, you're living in Eretz Yisrael, Me'ika Hadin. We are all Svardim. We have come home, and here's where he says it. As far as I know, this is the first time, but he repeats this many times. And what does he mean by that? Eretz Yisrael, and by the way, and Rabbi Dr. Binyamin Lau's doctorate, the rabbi in at the end of Katamon, a well-known rabbi, right? You know I'm talking about Rabbi Lau. It's Chief Rabbi Lau's nephew. It's Lavi's son. His father was the consul to the Israeli embassy in New York. I can tell you in 78, 80, he used to come to my shirim where I taught in New York those two summers for the Jewish agency, for the... you know what I'm talking about? Kat, Chavit Aliyat Torah Nitu. We did a great thing. I'm one of the inventors of this idea. The idea is very simple. Boys and girls were coming back from Israel. For the first time, hundreds or thousands of American youngsters are talking about Aliyah. But then you have a big problem. Aliyah depends upon, more important than the husband, the wife has to want to. If the wife doesn't want to go in Aliyah, you're finished. So you see this beautiful girl, you're attracted, and it ruins your life because she keeps you in America, and 20 years later, you look at yourself and say, wasted. I know cases like that. So we came up with the idea, Kat, Chevet Aliyah Toranit, that we would run socials, and I taught for two summers. These were college, post-college kids. I keep on meeting them all over Israel. And everyone in the room, if you walked in, it meant you were thinking about Aliyah. You follow me? And you could look at any girl or any boy, and you didn't have to worry. They were interested in Aliyah. So his father, Lavi, who was consul, used to come to my shayurim. I taught him. And what's interesting is Benny, Lavi, took back the name Lau. Because the Laos, for at least 26 generations, I don't know if I have the right number, but you got to read the chief rabbi's memoir, were Rabbanim in Poland. And he took back the name Lau, as covered to all his antecedents in the rabbinate. So his doctorate on remember I showed you the doctorate on Rav Ovadia Yosef, it's his PhD from Bar Ilan, it's a very good doctorate. And he deals with this. And he shows that Rav Ovadia, why did Rav Ovadia get into such trouble with the Iraqis? Because Rav Ovadia smacked down the Ben Ish Chai and said, we've got to go back to the Beit Yosef. And the Beit Yosef, that's Rav Yosef Karo, the Mechaber, was Mered the Ara of Eretz Yisrael. So when you come here, it's like Yitzchak grew up in Boston. No, tell me, would Rabbi Rubin do anything against Rav Soloveitchik? I ask you. You don't even know what happened last year in class. I can't go into detail now. The whole Gemara in Pesachim. Remember last year? I was crying. Here you see a young kid. Don't look at Yitzchak as he is. Now everyone is young and old at the same time. Look at Yitzchak, a kid of 15. He heard the Rev give his shiur. Saturday night after Abdullah, he takes what's left in the coast, puts it into the refrigerator, takes it out next Friday night, adds a little wine and makes kiddush, following what the Rav taught him, based upon the Gemara, that the Rav was quoting, inverted the Gemara. And his mother is saying to him, Yitzchak, Yitzchak, we didn't do it in the house, I never saw my father do it, what are you doing? And Yitzchak is telling her, Rabbi Soloveitchik, okay? So, you grew up in Boston, the Mayor of the Ara was the Rav. I grew up in New York, so as I write in Washington, whenever I had a shy, I went to Rav Moshe. I write that in relation to the widow, with the chlitzo, with the difference between here, and if I had that problem in the rabbinate, any problem I had in the rabbinate, I called Rav Moshe. Really, that's the way we grew up. So Rav Ovadia holds, you come to Eretz Yisrael, you have to follow the Beit Yosef. There's no concept of an Ashkenazi here. We are all a Dot HaMizrach. More than that, ask a logical question. You can say, and he asks this, he does this, and he repeats this time and time and time again. You can say, all right, a little few Ashkenazim came. You'll see a source where this is said openly. At the time, there were 10,000 Svadim here. 500 Ashkenazim came. No, halakha, we follow the Rav. You're learning your Adaya now. You're learning with Poskim. You've all learned Mishnah Brewer. What does the Mishnah Brewer do? He counts up heads, right or wrong. 20 people say one thing, 10 say another, you follow the 20. Right or wrong. It's the Mishnah Brewer. you come to Erev, the Mishnah Berurah remains at a standstill because it mamish is the Beit Ephraim against the Mishkan of Yaakov, and you see the line up on either side. So he reaches the conclusion, if you erase Shemayim, you don't build an Erev in a big city. Okay. So Rav Avadya says, come on, they were all Sfadim here. 100 Ashkenazim came, they're nullified. So ask a logical question. That was 200 years ago. Nowadays in the country we have, can I hire 6 million Jews? I would say 3.5 million are Eidot HaMizrach and the 2.5 are Ashkenazim. And you got to remember, even with the tremendous Russian immigration, underline the word immigration, not Aliyah, many of them are Eidot HaMizrach. Bukharins, Georgians. You got to understand, the Russians, they may be totally assimilated, but that doesn't make them Ashkenazim yet. So nowadays, an Ashkenazi is going to get up, Matan is going to say, I'm not a Eidot HaMizrach, I'm part of the overwhelming majority, we believe in democracy, we are Ashkenazim, how can Rav Avadya say we can eat beans and rice on Pesach, etc.? So Rav Avadya says very beautifully, each time Ashkenazim came, they were nullified. In other words, the Sfadim were always the majority here. So when you nullify them each time, all right, they came 200 years ago, another group came 190 years ago, another group came 170, 150, 100 years ago. Each time they were knocked out of the box. And they become part of the majority. And this is very powerful. Because the implication is that comes Pesach, Danny Wolf, with a name like Wolf, no one's going to suspect that he's a Sfardi, that Danny Wolf can go before a Beis Din and say, if I would have known what the Sfardic practice is, I would have been happy to be a Sfardi, to be Somachan, the Beit Yosef. I'm living in Israel, the majority is Sfardim, the Beit Yosef is the Murad, the Ara of Eretz Israel, he is the Posek. If I had known this, I would have already 10 years ago started eating rice and beans on Pesach. And I want you to know, there is a Beis Din in Givat Shaul, you know, when he's an Australian, learned to make us a Rav for 10 years, now he's a big Lamdan. He, Paskins La'alocha, the Jerusalem Post quotes him every Erev Pesach, that all the Ashkenazim can eat beans and rice and join the crowd. All right?
So why does anyone hold that?
Look, plenty. I want to tell you. I want to tell you. A lot of people talk a hold by it. You don't even realize. But even Rav Avadya toned down a little bit. When they asked him last year, he said Ashkenazim still can't eat beans and rice. So Rav Avadya toned down a little bit. Why he toned down, I don't know. It may be his relationship with Rav Yashiv and his the way he is mevatel et atzmo before Ashkenazic gedolim, it could be. Look, it's an interesting shaila. Pesach here is very difficult because you get here beans and you get here rice with a hekshel of Pesach l'ochlei kidney. You get string beans, the cans, good. I like to make Pesach early in my house. I don't want to have tension. And last Pesach we went away and they bothered me from America, one of these, what we were talking about last night, one of these 10-star hotels wanted me to come this Pesach, and, you know, all expenses paid, and even a little bit extra, and treated like a king, and all I have to do is give a talk a day, you know, that to me is not that difficult. And but I told them that every other year I make the Seder, you understand? My family, one part of the family, which lives near us, one year they're at the other part of the, you know, from their other side, and one year they're with us. So once I have to make the Seder, it's more important than anything to make a Seder for grandchildren. So when you make Pesach, I can't, I don't want tension. I don't want to wait till, I've seen people wait till, I've seen Erev Pesach, homes of Gedolei Yisrael, that you can go crazy what's going on. So we'll make Pesach a week earlier. So you should know, I have beans, I have string beans, I can have all the kidney yet in the world, kosher, the Pesach, Baruch Hashem, rice, I don't eat all, yeah, so I don't have to eat it before Pesach. But you understand what I'm saying, Michael? But it's a problem. Rabbi Lewittis used to say to me, Rabbi Lewittis, Rabbi Dr. Mendel Lewittis, Zechut Tzadik Levracha, again, it's a different era, but he was, you should know, you fellows who graduated Yeshiva College, he was in the first graduating class of Yeshiva College, 1932. And he was a Talmud of Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. He's the one who saw the letter that Reb Moshe was, he was Reb Moshe's like assistant. He used to go to the post office and buy, I don't know what you call it, but you pay money in the post office in America and they send it to Germany and you can cash it there for German money. What's the word for that? A wire. I would ask me to pay, you know, you buy script. And he used to buy, Reb Moshe used to send him, used to send him to buy this script to send to the Rav in Berlin. You understand? So that's how close he was to Reb Moshe. So he saw the famous letter where Reb Moshe wrote to the Rav, how can you marry this lady? We never met the family. Who knows what her pedigree is? I speak about this in the documentary. And the Rav answers Reb Moshe, quoting Yerodeya, Kibbut Aviyein, that a man's allowed to marry the woman he wants even if his parents don't approve, because it's Sad the Gufo. And Reb Moshe reads it for the class and says, my zun is gerecht, my zun is gerecht, my son is right, my son is right. How do I know this? I know from Rabbi Lewittis. So Rabbi Lewittis used to say to me, Michael, that the first thing the Sanhedrin has to do is abolish the minhag on Pesach not to eat legumes. Okay, we should lift the sea a Sanhedrin and Be'ezrat Hashem. Now, here's one of the most famous tshuvot of Rav Ovadia on this topic, and you'll see the analysis he makes. It's Yabia Omer, Chelik Hamishi, and it's Siman Lamed Zion. Yabia Omer, by the way, of all his Sfarim, the Yabia Omer, the set of Yabima, I believe they're 9 out. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe they're 9 Chalakim. This is his most famous work. This is his most learned work. This is written for Talmidei Chachamim. This rivals the Yigrot Moshe. This rivals the Minchat Yitzchak. This is the one that carries the most weight, the most prestige, the Yabia Omer. Due to the fact that his children work with him, and Reb David and Reb Yitzchak, if I have the names right, and the other sons, there's another son, Reb Yaakov Yosef, who's an Adam Gadol, but there's a breach with the family. Reb Yaakov Yosef is already very, very different. And if you recall, he's a Gonadia, he's the Rav of Sanhedrias, that whole area. And the Rav, yeah, I see him at the Kotel occasionally. When I see an Adam Gadol, I shake, I shiver. And it's Kulo Torah, Kulo Chesed, Kulo L'Shem Shemayim. And what we spoke about last Monday in Emmanuel with that fence they built. Remember I told you in the school, the Beis Yaakov, that Chassidish girls shouldn't see the Sfadik girls. God have mercy that we should have such an event, such an occurrence. It hurts, it hurts, it hurts. And we want to make people from. I'm always bothered by people who are not from and know me. How can it be they know me and they didn't become from? And it bothers me. It shows there's something missing in me. And just think, we want to make people from with such an event. So Rabbi Yaakov Yosef fought against it, opened up his mouth loud and clear, unlike his father, unlike his brothers, unlike Shas. And Rabbi Yaakov Yosef said, and I believe this took guts and honesty, and this is a man after my heart. He said, let's be honest, he said, the Haredim have this enmity for Eidot HaMizrach. In the religious Zionist world and in the Chabad world, they treat the Eidot HaMizrach like their own. There are no fences and there is no feeling that we are better. And those were beautiful words, and he's absolutely right. Anyway, so here Rav Ovadia has the classic question we're talking about, that an Ashkenaziyah married a Sfardi, all her years she had all the chumras of rice and legumes on Pesach, uka'et, iftanav shar and hol kaminik bala, She wants to do like her husband. She wants to cook rice for him. She wants to cook legumes for him. Is she allowed to do it? Now, this is the classic question. Also notice what's taken for granted here. And I have to tell you, with the feminist revolt and all that's happened, they're shifting sands here. Meaning, takes for granted, the wife has to cook for the husband. You understand? It could very well be, and I see my grandchildren and their wives, and it could very well be. She'll say, I'll cook for myself, you cook for yourself. You understand? It's interesting that this concept that the wife has to cook for the husband cannot be taken as a given anymore. But nevertheless, you have one set of dishes, you have one house, you have one set of spoons and forks, you have one microwave, a vase, or two microwaves. By the way, microwaves, they're cheap enough, everyone should have two. I see so much smoke, and I don't know, I can't see the heter of using one microwave, even though they say cover it up, but it's cheap enough. I mean, even in Israel, you can get a very good microwave for a few hundred shekels. It's no big deal, and it doesn't take up that much space. But be it as it may, you have one house, you have to see to it that it's one kitchen. How are you going to run two separate kitchens in one house? All right. But it could be you could find solutions. I don't want to be overly wise. I mean, it's not the end of the world. We'll come to this if the husband, who's a Sfardi, eats out of pots and pans, and she eats out of the same ones, but she doesn't cook rice and she doesn't cook legumes for herself. But we'll come to it. Now, Reb Ovadia makes the following analysis. And here we come to a sugya in Chulin, Daf Yud Chet Amid Bet. When you learn Shkita, are they teaching Shkita anymore in the Kollel? Wow. In my days, you see that? Remember how much we suffered with Shkita? I actually got a master's. I got one of my master's out of Shkita. You know the story. Reb Heschel writes about it. Heschel writes about it in one of his poems. But I'm the victim. We were learning Hilchot Shkita, and I was looking for a topic for my I have an MA in Jewish history, in addition to an MHL in Hebrew literature, which, say them, two masters, doesn't matter. So, it's before my doctorate. So, I'm looking for a topic. I have to do a thesis, a master's project, I think they called it. A doctorate is a thesis. So, we're learning in class, I think it's Simon Bet and Yeredeya, about who can be a shoychet. So we come to someone with mental illness. And we get involved with someone, you know, someone with mental illness. Obviously, it can't be a shoychet, he's a shoyta. But have you ever seen mental illness, Lo Aleinu? Generally speaking, you will never see a shoyta. You will see someone who's eaten chalom, eaten shoyta. Someone who at times is normal, at times not. Well, it can be schizophrenia, it can be bipolar. This mental illness is quite prevalent, unfortunately. I've dealt with it quite a few times in my life. And it's very hard. I want to tell you, it's not an easy question, because I go to visit this person in a mental institution. He speaks perfectly normally. And at the end, he will say to me, Rabbi, could you talk with the nurses? The doctor is trying to poison me. And he's saying that just a minute ago, you were talking about Nixon and the Chvais Eisenhower and Kennedy and McCarthy, and he was totally lucid. And a minute later, he says that to you. No, if he shechs, does it count? Doesn't it count? So the Rav got into a whole discussion of the Cleaves Get, which was the classic case in rabbinic literature on a schizophrenic giving a get. Did he know what he was doing? Didn't he know what he was doing? And I was so enthralled by that, I did my master's on the Cleaves Get. And that you should know, of all my published scholarship, it's in Rakofet Aaron today, it was published. I constantly get requests to quote it, to cite it in detail, or people want to republish it. It's a very fascinating piece of work. Someone who taught it, Michala, later did a psychological study, published a psychological study based upon my work, which was psychological, but basically historic and halachic. and he dealt with it from a psychological point of view. So you see, shechita is a very fascinating topic. Now, how do you shecht an animal? It's amazing, you're not learning shechita. So one of the things that can go wrong in shechita is called hagrama. What does hagrama mean? And this is not so simple. Mugremet they call it in the Gemara. It means, you see, the two organs that have to be slaughtered, the esophagus and the windpipe, it's over here, let's say. What about if you slaughter slightly below? So there's a tremendous machloket in the Gemara. And Rab Zeira in Bavel never ate from an animal that was slaughtered a little bit below where it had to be slaughtered. That's called the mugremet. He never ate. He treated it like a chas v'chalim in the middle of shechita. You push in, you follow. That passes the shechita. In the middle of shechita, you stop right at the start. All this passes. But when he came to Eretz Yisrael, the Gedolei Eretz Yisrael told him, "We eat here. We don't do minhag bavel. We're mekil." And he came to Eretz Yisrael, he ate. He changed. And Rav Ovadia says, a person has a right to change their location. And when they change their location, they can change their halachic practice. And this goes back to the Gemara I spoke about many weeks ago. Makom l'makom. You live in an area. Remember the Gemara's example? It's a fabulous example. You don't travel on Friday more than a mile away from your house. And you all know it goes on, the people going up to the mountains from Borough Park, Flatbush. Believe me, if I would have a dollar for everyone who was Machalos Shabbos, because they started out at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and they didn't take into account, or you couldn't take into account what's going on. I don't have to tell you. There is no infrastructure big enough today for cars. When I came in Aliyah, you could go from my house in Rad Berlin to Ramat Eshkol in 5 minutes. Who had a car? Today I live in the Bronx. You come with a car to visit me, you can't even park. It's unbelievable. I'm one of the few people in my building who has only one car, not two cars. So, this is a good minhag. You don't travel Erev Shabbos. Eli will testify. When I went up to Baltimore, I went on Thursday. I don't want to go Friday. I don't know what's going to happen Friday. Shabbos is Shabbos. You don't play games. So, imagine you live in an area where you don't travel Friday, and then you go to an area where they do travel Friday. And you're going to live in the new area. Ah, so it's a whole machloiket. Do you still keep that... Can you be totally lenient, or do you still keep a chumrah? And the overwhelming majority of poskim say, when you travel, you have every right to take the kula of your new area. You have moved, you have a new location, you have a new address. And he gets involved, and I want to tell you, this is psychologically so true. You come in Aliyah. There were people who came in Aliyah. He describes it. He gives you a source here. And they kept the second day yontif. Everyone laughed at them. What are you, idiots? But I can tell you what happened in 69. It's in the absorption center, Merkaz Klitak, Hatamontet, a famous absorption center, no longer exists. Worst part of Jerusalem. That's where they put the Anglos. You know, you can't believe what went on there. Men used to beat their wives every Friday night. The screams. So we once called the police. The police came and said, "Don't you understand? This is their custom. This is their Sabbath joy. The men beat their wives. Don't call us next time. It's normal. It's accepted. It's their culture." We were Anglos. Put us in a neighborhood like that. But okay, we survived. Baruch Hashem. So a fella came in Aliyah with me who graduated Yeshiva College 1 year before me, a wonderful fella named Filer. And I remember Rosh Hashanah is 2 days. Yom Kippur, Baruch Hashem, is 1 day. Imagine, Daniel, if you had to have 2 days in Lawrence. Sukkot, 1 or 2. So I remember he said to me, Ani, he said, you're going to observe only 1 day Sukkot? How can you do it? And I could see the Yirat Shemayim in him. You know, like, 3 years, we still have to observe 2 days. You understand? I understand him. I was impressed. I was moved. But I knew enough learning, even though I was a kid in 69, I knew enough to tell him, you have to observe 1 day. If you observe 2 days, it's brachot levatala. You're going to make kiddush? What are you talking about? So you see, Rabbi Avadya quotes the case of Yontif Sheni, that the minute you come in Aliyah, it's 1 day. If you keep 2 days, to use our language, you are an idiot. How can you? And Rabbi Avadya says the same thing when you get married. It's going from house to house. Now you have to get involved. Again, this is what I warned you. You have to understand the social content. What do you mean going from house to house? So al pi halacha, if you learn Masechet Ketuvot, the woman has to move to where the man wants to move. And the only time the woman has a right to force the man is if she wants to go in Aliyah. She wants to live in Eretz Yisrael, wants to live in Yerushalayim. Then she can force the man to follow her. And even that, if you'll see the Achronim, you'll see it's toned down. But Isha to Sove, Nikeva to Soveiv Gever. And she has to go with the man. And once she goes with the man, she has to follow his minhagim. He sets up the house. And she has to do everything so there should be shalom by it. And it's mimakam lemakam. Her father's house was one location. There they didn't travel Friday. Comparing it to the Gemara Beit Shan, that's the Sugya Makam Shenagu in Pesachim. And when she moves to her husband's house, he does travel on Friday, she has to go with him. She's in her father's house, they didn't eat rice, they didn't eat legumes. She marries her husband, she has to go with him. And she can eat rice, and she can eat legumes. And he quotes the Taj Bates, the member, well, what if she becomes widowed? So the analogy, he accepts the analogy, all the poskim, it's like a kohen. If she had children with the kohen, she remains in kahuna. She can eat truma. If she had children with the svadik husband, they eat rice, they eat legumes, she follows her children. She eats rice, she eats legumes. If she had no children, then she goes back to Rishut Avira. It's like she goes back to her original status when she was not married yet, and she's not allowed to eat rice and legumes on Pesach. Now, here's where he blows the horn loud and clear. If this halacha will apply in Chutz Laretz, for the sake, Flatbush, you know how many Ashkenaziyot married the S.Y.s in the Flatbush community. If it applies in Chutz Laretz, Alacha Chama V'Chama, he says. In Eretz Yisrael, where the Rambam, let me quote his words, Shekiblu Aleim Horot HaRambam Umaram HaShulchan Orech, and Alpihem Yachanu V'Alpihem Yisu, that everything we do, we paraphrases B'nai Yisrael, following the Anan HaKavod in Eretz Yisrael, we have to follow the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. And here he quotes something. I'll tell you, it's just beyond words what he's quoting here and the idea he's touching upon. Tell me, look at our generation. What we went through. And yet you'll go to Germany and you'll find Israelis of German origins living in Germany, making a living in Germany, happy in Germany. I taught women in Machon Gold, maybe in Michalatu, I don't recall, but I know in Machon Gold, girls raised in Germany. Father survived, came to Israel a few years, had a business opportunity, went back to Germany. I met in Yeshiva Akoto, one of my grandson's friends, a boy from Germany. And the same story. And would you believe it or not? The young Habanim Smecha has a grandson who's the Shaluach in, I think it's one of the Kehilot in Germany. At least one grandson. He has a whole flock of grandsons. All of them are Shluchim all over the world. Okay. But you see, psychologically, if you had a nice childhood, you have memories. People want to go back. Some people, they never really left where they grew up. You see how people are flocking back to Poland, flocking back to Hungary. I mean, people are telling, we went back, we saw the street, we looked for the house. They walk, all right, I have to admit, in 77 or 78, I remember a Talmud, Danny Rothenberg, I can mention the Talmud, Rabbi Dr. Danny Rothenberg, drove me and my family to the street where I was born and raised, Washington Avenue in the Bronx, the street I have perpetuated in my new book. Pardon me for sounding so august. But anyway, be it as it may, it's your childhood. If you had a bad childhood, you're going to have psychological problems. No two ways about it. The head shrinkers, I don't want to offend any of you who are studying, who have degrees in psychology, but the head shrinkers make a fortune off people who had problems in their childhood. You had a happy childhood, it's a natural tendency to go back. Okay? So Rav Ofadjah makes a point here. Some of these Ashkenazim came to Sephardic, I'm quoting him word by word here, came to Sephardic communities. V'afabishem skufim etochufim v'lo matzu manoach. And michsafim heim latush k'neshel l'mekomom. I mean, I can't believe these words. They're not happy. They're butchering. You know, you have this, you're seeing Aliyah. There's a real problem with the second generation parents coming Aliyah. You bring teenage children. You know how many problems we have here? Have any idea? A kid, it's one thing to come with a kid. I always tell people, come when your children are under 10, 11. If they're older, come when they're in college already. And the reasons why, because when you're younger, you can still form an Israeli identity. When you're in college, you're always going to be an Israeli of American origins, of Canadian origins. You're never going to form a total Israeli identity. But a kid caught in the middle has the real problem. And the kid will be upset. Everyone here is soccer. What the heck is soccer? Baseball. You follow? It's the way you were raised. Once you gave a whole drusha in Lido Beach. I gave a drusha there. They were the Kahal went crazy with joy. Sports is something like you're born into a nation. It's part of your nationalistic identity. It's beyond the individual. Who gives a heck about the Yankees? Oh, I saw Joe DiMaggio. You know what? There. Remember I mentioned Joe DiMaggio last week? Wasn't that tall? Remember I was talking to the couple from Toronto and they had given me that tape in the summer, that DVD. So I already got contacted that I'm wrong, that actor was 6'3". And DiMaggio was 6'2". Could you imagine? I'm always making a mistake with height. But to me, he looked too short to be Joe D. But you see, Rav Ofadjah is so insightful. You can learn to go back to Poland, to Germany, to White Russia, to the Ukraine, to the United States, to Canada. You can learn from today to tomorrow. Where are you living now? You're living in Israel? You're a Sfadi, the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch. How dare you follow some foolish Ashkenazic practice that back was in the Gola. Now you're a lot Mata Kodesh, Nekshavim Kivnei HaMakom Shedarimbo. I got to tell you, I don't know if he realizes the depth of what he said. You follow me, Daniel? But boy, do I realize it, because he hit the nail on the head. There's so much childhood rearing, there's so much depth in here. And you should know, it's a real problem. A book just came out, Akiva Reagan, Nomi Reagan's son. He happens to be a good friend of my grandson. I don't know, we're classmates, but remain good friends until today, one of my grandsons. Just published a book. It's a novel, but it's based upon his own life. And part of it deals with the adjustment of a kid of far Rockaway origins to yeshiva, to chesda, to the Israeli reality, to the kikar chatulat in Jerusalem, and the drugs and all that goes on, and you have no idea the work the OU does. Are you aware what they call it, the Zulu? What do they call it, the Zulu house? I mean, it's some Zula. Zula. How's the word?
Zula.
Zula. What does that word mean? Everyone used the word Zulaman. Yeah, but what's the origins of Zula?
Arabic.
All right, the Zula, Zazain the Zula. I love the word. And kids can drop in and they have terrible problems. And kids committed suicide. Kids overdosed. I know cases. Kids became Mechallelei Shabbos from the finest families. What we spoke about last night with Rivka and Yitzchak. The finest families. And Rav Avadya hits the nail on the head. And then, you see in his, the man's knowledge, breathtaking. Hagon Reb Binyamin Mordechai Navon. By the way, the Navon family is what the president of Israel, Yitzchak Navon, you've heard the name, he was priest in his 90s today, should live and be well, married to Ophira, mean anything to you? Oh yeah, there was also an Ashkenaziyah who married a Sfardi. And Yitzchak Navon, interesting individual, caught between two worlds. He always complains to Sfadik Rabbanim too from today. And I say, Rakepet Sfadiz, yeah. And he always says, the Rabbanim of my youth were so liberal. Yeah, they were wonderful. They were liberal. In the meantime, every Sfadik kid became a half Mechallel Shabbos. You follow me? Today, Baruch Hashem, they are firmer and stricter, and the Ashkenazim have ruined them, but at least the kids, 90% remain firm. So Yitzchak Navon, an interesting, interesting individual. So this is one of his, he comes from a very famous rabbinic family. So here he quotes what I was telling you, that I, the Ashkenazim today, have a powerful community. He says, oh, the first Ashkenazim, there were no Ashkenazim here. It was only Sfadim. You remember the Rambam says, remember I showed you this maybe last year already. I showed it at the end of the year, the Rambam and Sefer HaMitzvot, that there will always be a minion of Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. If that minion disappears, our whole calendar goes under, right or wrong. The famous Rambam, Sefer HaMitzvot, right? We spoke about it, am I right, Danny, last year? You know, these were always Sfadim. Then Harav HaMufla Reb Menachem Mendel Mishikolov Ashkenazi Mitalmid HaGra MeVilna Hu Haya Rishon Shabbat Ladur B'Yir HaKodesh. Let me talk like an Eidat Hamid. Ve'acharav Ba'u Ma'at Ma'at Ad Shenasu L'Kal Gadol Hashem Aleihem Yichyu. It is fabulous. Now, you know who that is. One of my children lives on the street, named Shikolov in Harnof. It's Reb Menachem Mendel Meshikolov. He was a Talmud Mavuk of the Vilna Gaon. This is part of that original Aliyah of Talmidei HaGra that so much has been written on and doctorates have been done and theories have been expounded. This is Rivlin, this is Shtamfa, these are the Talmidei HaGra. So he says they came along a trickle, a little trickle. And Baruch Hashem, they became a Kal Gadol. But now, each time they came, they were nullified by the Sfadim. And in Eretz Yisrael, they should accept the Psak of the Sfadim and the Nohag, the way Sfadim live. And even if they don't, but if Ashkenaziyot marry Sfadim, alachat kama v'kama, they have to follow Sfadim psak, rice and beans on Pesach. One step further. It's fabulous. We mentioned this. Now here's the source. Gentlemen, how many wives do you have? Well, who here is 5G? You're Ashkenazim, one wife. Kevim de Rabbeinu Geshem. Sodom today too, and at least in Eretz Yisrael, can only take one wife. If they take more than one wife, it's bigamy. Law of the land, the rabbinate too. The rabbinate rule, the government can't rule that because the government cannot get involved. Chuppah, the condition in Eretz Yisrael is in the hands of the rabbinate. So the government could not get involved, but it's a takana. First day, today we don't even do chlitza. We don't even do, not chlitza, we don't even do yibum. We only do chlitza, svadik. And I told you, a svadik guy says, I want to marry my sister. I want to marry my sister-in-law. My brother died. No, we don't allow it. The reasons are obvious. We're living in an oversex society, and if we don't have sexual standards on a higher level, God have mercy, what can happen in our society. I mean, also, it's beyond words. There's no modesty left. It's just beyond words. I was in New York. I told you the first Sunday when they allowed same-sex marriages, it was like mutton. God have mercy. They were dancing in the streets. The New York Times declared it the greatest day since the creation of the world, since the Big Bang. I said to Chassidim, how can you live in a place like this? But, you know, life goes on. Normal men, what can they do? Their wives don't want to go in Aliyah. They're stuck in Borough Park. What can you do? They have shop right there. They have 13th Avenue there. The men let the Chazer Shetak, pardon the Yiddish. To translate that is impossible. No. Look what he brings up here. What did we say last week? That with all these concepts of minhag hamakom, if you live in an area where you can't have more than one wife, you can move to 1,000 different cities where you can have two wives. You still can't have more than one wife. That chayrim, that takana, is on your head, remains with you all your life. And again, the explanation is simple. The explanation is simple. I have it in my work on the Rav. And don't forget what I'm telling you, because people will always ask you the question how primitive Judaism is. You originally had more than one wife. The Catholic Church always knifed us. But Torah is given within a certain generation. Torah was given when this was the norm, this was the mode of life. One husband, two wives, three wives. The women were very happy. It was a different concept. Today you can't do it, but it was a different concept. Fine. And by the way, I can understand the concept. You have so many single girls today. So many girls are not having children. So many women already started the AID. You don't know what's going on in Katamon and Talmudot of mine in America. Don't ask. No, at least if the husband had two wives, three wives, they'd have a father image, perhaps. I don't know. But still, you understand yourselves. We cannot do this today. If I have time, ask me later to tell you a funny experience I had last Shabbos on this very, very topic. So, Rav Ovadia quotes Sfarim that, listen carefully, maybe the concept of not eating beans and rice on Pesach is like not having more than one wife. And once you get caught up with that concept, with that minhag, you can never change. Could be. But Ovadia says, no. When it comes to beans and rice. And here he goes in again. We've quoted this weeks ago. It's a reality dealing with human foibles. What does that mean? Why do we have this minhag not to have beans and rice? Why? Well, one reason, and that's the reason which I dismiss Bizman Hazeh, because if you can have beans and you make bean cake or corn cake, which I've seen, people will make regular bread. All right, I don't think that's a serious... I take the second reason much more seriously because of, I told you, in the army, when they called up the rabbinate, they cleaned the rice before Pesach, I saw with my own eyes, foreign matters can fall into the rice. It's on fields, the winds are blowing. And you can have a wheat grain, barley grain, right in the rice. Aye, we can find a solution, cook it all before Pesach, it's batel b'shishim, it's not mashahu before Pesach. But you have to be a Talmud Chacham to do that. The army did it, they cooked it, they put it into freezers. Today, whatever the reasons are, they don't serve rice in the army on Pesach, which I don't understand, because a Dat HaMizrach people, if they don't have rice, they haven't eaten the meal. I see my grandchildren, some of them are so integrated here, are so interwoven, if they don't have rice, it's not a meal. Shabbos, they have to have rice. That's a reason. It makes sense. Maybe once you're caught up with it, you're caught up with it forever. And Rav Avadya says, absolutely not. This is a siyag. Some people are worried, some people are not. But the concept of not having more than one wife, it's not a siyag, you see. It's against Torah. Remember I told you the story, now I'll tell you the story. I'm watching the clock, I understand. But now I'll tell you the story. I told you this. I once said to a class in Machon Gold, I'll never forget it. These were mature women, it's before the Yom Kippur War, and you came to Israel either a junior or post college. I made shidduchim. These girls were 22 already. I made shidduchim with talmidim of mine in BMT. Thank God they're grandparents to them. So I went and said to the class, he went out with a boy, and the boy says to you, honey, I love you, but you know it's after the Holocaust. 3 million Jewish children were killed. I mean, just think how many Jews there would be. It's after the Holocaust. I want to marry you, but only on condition I can marry two other wives, and I could have, let's say, 30, 40 children. I want to get even with Hitler. And I asked the girls, how many of you would accept that proposal? One hand went up. And last Shabbos, when I was the rabbi, the only rabbi, I still don't understand it, at this elegant bar mitzvah, eating in a medieval castle created in the academy house where Moshe last hasn't even walked in. Where do you come from in America, Moshe?
Queens.
Yeah, they wouldn't let you in from Queens. At least the 5 towns you may bluff your way in. Queens, a nechtek a tug. Chaim, right here, I'm sitting at the table with the father and mother of the bar mitzvah boy and with the father's sisters, two of that of the three, the other one was at another table, and sitting right before me is the girl who raised her hand unto 40 years ago, I would marry a man and let him have two other wives to have children. I hate to tell you where she's at today, but what I laughed at, she has one husband and she says at times she'd like to get rid of him. So I was sitting there, oh my gosh. You see, it's not a siyag. If you're looking for the Torah point of view, believe me, I have seen people, my own family, they have 100 direct descendants. I saw cases where they were burying a woman, it was written up in every Israeli newspaper, hundreds of direct descendants walked behind the coffin, the bier, the stretcher. In America there was a case, it made the New York Times, a woman I believe in the Satmar, what do they call the Satmar encampment up, Monroe, a woman, Hungarian woman, hundreds and hundreds of direct descendants. That is revenge from Hitler, Yamach Shmo B'Zichro. That is revenge. But with one wife. This is something, it's against Torah. You're right, it's against the betterment of the Jewish people. It's against the heart of what we want to accomplish. But we live in a different society. One man, one woman. I don't have to go any further than the Rav. I don't have to go any further than quoting from my work on the Rav, where I give you the exact source, where the Rav said, symmetry. He will not sign a chet de meir rabbanim. If she can't be married, he can't be married. Quote, end quote. And you know, the Rav was challenged. Rabbi Sauer challenged him. How could Rabbi Wurzburger say this? I got news for you. Rabbi Wurzburg was absolutely right. And I give you the exact source. You can listen to the tape. I think that tape circulated through Norton. And you can hear the Rav say it. All right. You don't like it, you don't like it. You don't agree with it, you don't agree. But Mori Rebbe said it. And I understand him 100%. And this is what Rav Ovadia is saying here. That you can't make the analogy to say that maybe with rice and the beans, it's like Cheirim de Rabbeinu Geshem. Once I'm caught up with it, it lasts forever. Chas v'chalila. That's a seer, that's a gedda, that's a gezerah. Where they observe it, they observe it. Where they don't observe it, they don't observe it. Masha gazru gazru, masha lo gazru, lo gazru. And ein anu gazru gezerat bizman hazeh. This is a basic principle in halacha. Now, and then he goes on that women growing up, and of course this is the fancy play on words that you've heard many times, the feminists go crazy, you know, and by the way, I have to tell you, the feminists are not fair, because I can quote the gemaras that talk about love, gemaras that talk about hate, gemaras that talk about men who are idiots, gemaras that talk about men that are saints, just as they had various opinions on women, but that's part of life. It reflects the hundreds of years of Tanaim and Moraim and their interaction with life, and they know two people are the same. We're sitting in this class, we're a homogeneous group, and yet we're a heterogeneous group. And I learned that. It's the secret of being a Rebbe. I'm the proud. You read my book. I trust you studied my book, Washington. I'm the proudest Rebbe in the world. And I have Talmidim in Eidah Haredit, and I go to Yisrael, the Mizrahi, etc., the left, the right. I get upset with those that, you know, have crossed over and are reforming Yiddishkeit. But everyone's entitled to express their own inclinations. None to ain. The Rav always used to say, that's it's the Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Where each one is a whole world unto himself. So Rav Moshe says, when a woman is growing up, nushim daitin kalot aleihem. Alright, because I'll say this. So of course you take the simple pshat, women don't have as deep minds as men. Alright? And of course the feminists go crazy. So the Dashanim say, Nershim Daitin Kalot Aleichem, there's just one mistake. Whoever copied it over, it shouldn't be with a kuf, it should be with a chaf, kalot. A woman, a boy dreams of his bar mitzvah. My wife, one time a student of mine, my wife forced him into marriage. Whether it was good or bad, I don't know. But he was in his late 30s, and then there was arguments with the wedding and what to do and what this and that, and everything became an argument. It was a Litvisher world marrying into a Hungarische Welt. So my wife said, you had your bar mitzvah? This is her wedding now. You have to give in to her. And a girl dreams about a wedding. And that's what the Vavadja says, that a woman already from the time she is a teenager thinks in terms of marriage and going with her husband and establishing a home with her husband. And if this is the case, she has to follow her husband. Alkenya zovisha tavivi movidavat bi ishtova hayu lebasar echad. And in order to be basar echad, she leaves her father's house, her father's minhagim, and she takes on her husband. And then, and this is Rav Ovadia's beautiful Hebrew, who can equal him? V'chein b'kodesh chazitiha. L'hagon moreinu harav Rav Moshe Feinstein shlita. And he quotes Rav Moshe, we'll come to Rav Moshe next week, that a woman has to follow min hagei her husband. And he quotes Reb Moshe, where Reb Moshe quotes the whole topic of Kibud Av V'Aim. No? And imagine, the father needs, for the sake of argument, wants to get a new suit. And his daughter wants to buy it for him. Only if the husband approves. Understand? The husband has to agree. She can't do things on her own. Kibud Av V'Aim, it's the husband now comes first. It's no longer the father and mother. Of course, this may not entirely apply in modern times where women work and women have their own, you know, make their own money, but in the classic society as we knew it until the 20th century, the woman was dependent upon the man. And he quotes Reb Moshe, and here he says, Reb Ovadia has changed his mind. The Ein Tzarich Shum Hatara. She doesn't have to be Mataneta. See, he changes his mind. It's not something that came along suddenly. It is part and parcel of the feminine mystique. She wants to marry. To marry, there has to be Shalom Bayit. And she will take on her husband's Minhagim. Bein Lahakel. Bein lahachmir, hanireh la'ani v'dati katafti. And that is Rav Ovadia's tshuva. That is pristine, classic Rav Ovadia. You have to admit, the man was a gon adir. And I'm only quoting, you know, the general understanding of the tshuva. Every word I said, he brings sources on top of sources. So on this Sunday, let me reiterate. First of all, Yitzchak and Michael, can you, I don't know who, do you have a car here? Do me a favor, there's a couple, Yitzchak, there's a couple here, take them back to civilization, okay? You shoot them out of here. They have to go to Keren Kayem, to Kalkal, but leave them off, you know, where they can take a bus or walk, whatever you can work out. I don't want them to have to wait for me because I'll be here a while yet. My dear students, we began the day with words of praise for Shaarei Tzedek. I can't believe that critique of Eli Horowitz, of his daughter. You know, I told people, it could be, you know, when a person is dying, he's dying. And it could be, and this is what was in today's paper I saw in Yisrael Hayom, at Shaarei Tzedek, they give out the freebie papers as you walk in. So I saw the hospital said, they investigated, and at that moment, when he was actually dying, the doctors were working on an emergency. And that's triage. In other words, I don't have to tell you how much has been written, and this is a reality of life. There's nothing they can do for him. He's dying. But this other person they were working on, they wanted to stabilize. So that's why they didn't come running over right away. But I have to say again, I've been in Shaarei Tzedek before with my mom. I have seen unbelievable chesed and concern. They never said, she's 98, nothing we want to do. My mother broke her hip 3 years ago, which was the start of the slide. Until then, she was perfect and lived on her own. And I'll never forget, they operated, did everything they could to help. So, kol hakavod. Then we went in today's shiur, and the whole shiur centered around Rav Ovadia, the woman marrying her, following her husband, and all the minutiae that goes into it. You're in for a big shock when I quote Rav Ovadia next week and how he goes one step further that no one else has ever discussed. As far as I know, he's the first one. And from there, we go to the Igrot Moshe. And we're grinding away in a few weeks. We will have finished this topic that I began last year. And then comes a great moment of Shechiyanu, that I'm privileged to go back to lectures, but they're now different and expanded, that I gave more than 20 years ago, and since I totally forgot them and had so much to add, I want to give very basic lectures the rest of this year and next year on halacha, what it's about, how you paskin, the Vahashemzu halacha. I would like to believe that anyone who hears these lectures will one day be a great posek. Had I not been a Rebbe, I would have been a Dayan, because you have to have a feel for psak. Tomorrow, you can't get in without an $18,000 commitment to the IOU list. We're dealing with SAPMA, and Yitzchak will never accuse me of being a SAPMA after tomorrow. Hold on 1 second. A few freebies on the topic that's in the headlines now over the singing in the army. Rabbi Moshe Lichtenstein gave a psak that they shouldn't make an issue out of it. It's a very fascinating psak. I have to tell you, it's based upon the Rav, and I agree with the psak essentially, except I'm a little bit different than that. I feel if there are soldiers, let's say Gerach Siddim, or there are soldiers, Chardalim, who were taught by their Rebbeim, it's absolutely us to hear a choir singing, women, etc. So their commander should excuse them in advance. Not that they should walk out in the middle, but it should be done in advance. But Moshe here is, Moshe, very adamant. Okay. These are sheets from Rabbi Benjamin Hecht in Toronto. He writes, he's a YU Musmach. He writes on the Pasha of the Week. He is really insightful and good. If anyone wants, you're welcome to these, but it pays to subscribe. If you're going to be in the Rabnit, even the Machanech, he is second to none. I want to mention Chabad. I see my picture here. Someone sent it to me, and then I remembered I gave Haskama. A Rabbi Chaim Miller has come out with a commentary on the Chumash. I saw samples of it. It is fabulous. You'll ask a new commentary. It's classic commentators he quotes from, develops ideas, and he has bites, he calls it, like computer bites, I think the word, Kabbalistic, but he quotes from the Zohar on the side, quotes from the Rebbe, quotes from others. It's amazing, some of the kochot that are so fabulous and positive within the greater Chabad world. So I just want to tell you, it's called the Lifestyle Chumash. And I see among those recommending it are Rabbi Michael Broyd of, from Atlanta, Georgia, Dr. Miriam Adahan, who's published so much with Feldheim, and it is impressive what is being done. Finally, if anyone wants some decorations for your room, Basheba has been giving out posters, and here is Ma'arat HaMach Pela, who is giving out in honor of Chaye Sarah. If anyone wants it, you're welcome to it. Until we meet again tomorrow morning in health and happiness at 9 a.m. Das Vidanya.